And now for our feature presentation.
This is great because on the back it actually says this film is also known as
the I'll Watch It Later podcast.
Never heard of that film?
And now, on with the show.
Produce more fucking shelf space. That's the only thing you can produce. I know. All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to I'll Watch It Later podcast. As always, I am Aaron, joined by my good friend Jordan.
Hello.
And my producer, best friend, brother-in-law,
problem solver,
builder of things,
table cleaner.
He's literally Jesus, Scott.
Thank you.
Isn't it funny how it changes from
it's
week to week?
It's funny because he was here third Wednesday, built something, and then disappeared for 3 days. So it was weird.
Well, he finished last night on my face. Anyway. all right. So we are in the, what would this be called?
It's the reconstructed studio.
It's not reconstructed. It's still in construction.
The deconstructed studio.
Yeah, it's
a work in progress.
It's being refurbished right now.
I believe
it's once a refurbished studio.
Once everything is done, this will be a more functional space for you. So you can stop being cranky.
I'm not even cranky, dude. I'm just annoyed at what happened this morning. And for those of you that don't know, my entire Blu-ray collection fell over. Half of it. It wasn't.
We came in and he was buried under box sets, and we had to dig him out.
Yes, like. Daylight.
Like daylight, yeah. like Skinner when all the newspapers fell on him and no one could find him.
Yeah. Always Aaron's funky toe hanging out of the DVDs.
That's from the Army. That's service related.
Help! I'm covered under vinegar syndrome nudie movies.
I only have two. I can't help what they send for free.
So good.
As we appreciate you guys listening to the snack show, because this is coming out after the snack show. So thank you. We hope you enjoyed all those snacks. It was crazy when Jordan just started throwing up everywhere. I'm just kidding. We haven't recorded it yet. But we appreciate you listening. But we are here for, well, did you guys watch anything this week? Because we're kind of taping these back to back.
The week after the snack show, no, I didn't watch anything yet.
Right.
This week, I've been catching up on a lot of like TV shows. Like, again, I kind of... I watched Halo and I watched Moon Knight. I watched, you know, those kinds of things. I've been kind of rewatching for Wesley's sake because he's just young and I can't really watch anything fun that I want to watch. I've been putting on the Night at the Museum movies on Disney Plus, and like I find them to be enjoyable. There are parts that I'm like, okay, this is a very like early 2000s, mid 2000s joke that just has gone on too long. Paul Rudd was in the first movie that I completely forgot he was in the first movie. So he shows up randomly and, you know, it's kind of neat to see like Rami Malek still looking tired as fuck, but as an Egyptian. Wait, that's always his thing.
Tired Egyptian is his
Tired thing. Egyptian was on his resume for like the years. So we just actually this morning was hanging out with Wesley. We threw on part 3 to start it off and then we played Lego Star Wars, but...
You know who directed Night at the Museum?
Sean Levy.
Yeah, yep. Fuck that guy.
I know. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, oh, Aaron's going to be pissed.
Fuck that guy.
No, I'm not pissed. Those just movies are terrible. The first one is good.
Second one has some parts that are serviceable because we finished that one up. But overall, it's not a great movie.
I think Rebel Wilson's in the second one.
She's in the third one because they go to, I think, England.
Well, they all... The ones after the first
one. The second
one
is Amy Adams is like...
Yeah, Amelia Earhart. And she's like, I love you.
But see,
and then she's like, I'm just a statue.
I'm just wax.
And then at the end, he meets a girl that looks exactly like Amy Adams.
Right. How convenient.
Stupidest shit on the planet.
Right.
Fuck you, Sean Levy.
John Bernthal's in that movie. And I completely forgot he was in that as the black and white Al Capone.
Yes.
I'm like, damn, there are a lot of people in these movies that I forget
He's a character actor. So.
Yeah, it was weird because I always just, I kind of forget he's in a lot of stuff. I would say the one that I kind of recognize him the most from was, you know, the first season of Walking Dead. And then I started really paying attention to his career, but I'd forgotten he was in that. So
yeah,
it's kind of neat just seeing some of these people.
That's because you're not a movie buff. It's okay.
Well, I put my movies on shelves, not the floor.
Not the floor.
No, none of my movies are technically on the floor anymore. So, all right. I did watch Halo, and I did watch The Bubble, and the reason I bring them up together is because I did this thing with both of them where I watched like the first 10 minutes and I thought they were awesome.
Uh-huh.
And then
as it progresses.
And then as it progressed, it just got worse and worse. So I am no longer a fan of Halo. I think it's a terrible show.
Did you only do the first episode?
Only the first episode.
Okay, so I can't say that it gets infinitely better. They have definitely gone a different direction. I just finished episode 3, where in this episode, you literally don't see him in that Spartan armor until literally the last like 3 minutes of that show. You get introduced to Cortana, which is a whole other kettle of fish I don't want to really go over right now. It's a weird thing where I feel like they've changed the story enough to feel fresh to people who aren't used to it, but it's kind of shitting on 20 years of history for all the people who've been playing since the Xbox.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird mix where it's like I want to really like it, and there are parts that I feel like it's okay. But I for me, as much as I think it would appeal to Scott and you, there's a scene where Master Chief's completely nude standing in a bathroom, and, you know, I don't know.
The donger?
No, they didn't show the donger.
I'm going to have to watch Halo now.
Yeah, you're good.
Isn't it Paul Schreiber or whatever?
Pablo Schreiber.
Yeah, that's what I meant, sorry. Which Orange is the New Black.
I follow him on Twitter. Like, I've been kind of following to see what he's been saying, because he's kind of one of those, he likes to engage with people.
Den of Thieves.
And someone said, well, you know, I'm done with this show. I mean, would it hurt you guys to put the helmet back on? And then he responded with, clearly, you know, that's not the direction we're going. So you either get over it or you get out. I'm like, oh, fuck, they're not going to do anything.
Oof.
It's bummer. And like, they're on Reach. And I'm like, glass this fucking planet. Like, it has to, like, you have to do something to appeal to people that actually cared about this franchise, or you're going to lose 90% of your watchers.
Ooh.
So I'm going to continue to watch. It is a rough, rough thing to do, though. Like, it's frustrating me to a point where it's like, I just have to think about this in a separate category. I can't.
I'd have probably tapped after like the first episode. If something hits me bad.
First 20 minutes is, aside from some really weird CGI choices, it is a fun fucking episode.
I don't think you would hate it as much as we probably hate it, because you never played Halo.
Like one time, probably.
Right,
in
exactly.
Like the
so
early
you don't,
80s.
You know, it's not nostalgic or, you know,
and
you're not into the lore.
And that's probably part of why this is such a problem to me, because it's mixing things where it's like, I get that this is kind of almost like a prequel to things. You know, you don't know about the Flood. You're barely learning about how the Forerunners are. You kind of know the Covenant. But then they've taken liberties with the story where the Covenant have what they're calling like the Oracle or some chick who's a human. And it goes against everything the Covenant was, you know, against in the games. And I'm sitting there going, okay, you just needed a human element in this. And I don't know why. And it's a lot of bad storyline choices. And it's frustrating. And Bokeem Woodbine's in the second episode. He's got a weird fucking alien arm. And it's frustrating, but I'm going to watch because I'm a glutton for punishment. Apparently.
I was just going through those tweets you were talking about. Yeah, you're...
Right?
Even Elon Musk is like, what are you doing?
Exactly. Like, if you've gone and gotten Elon Musk to go, hey, maybe you tone it down, maybe that's a problem. So there's... Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to keep watching. I think Moon Knight, for me so far, two episodes in, compared to the three of the Halo, I feel is superior.
Moon Knight's fucking awesome.
And it's pretty
watch
great.
Moon Knight,
yeah,
Scott.
Moon Knight's good.
I've been a little busy this week.
Doing what?
Yeah, fucking, what have you
what
done?
Have I been what have I been doing this week? I don't know, man.
I've done shit. Look at how impatient he is. He wants to get into this shit that we're going to eat in the next episode that we've already recorded.
The next episode that
recorded. Be on the show. This is just for me.
No, that's the on the show. That's the stipulation to be buying it for.
Listen to this selfish bastard.
Right? I don't want to. Knocks over all his shit, makes us clean it up, and he wants to eat
what?
The snacks.
How? I cleaned it up.
What have you done all week?
What have you done?
Anyways, I did watch The Bubble. That movie fucking sucks.
Because in both instances, the first Halo episode, you're like, this fucking is awesome. And okay, then you're like, yeah, the gun thing. And then you never said anything after that. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And then you did the same thing with The Bubble. You're like, dude, The Bubble's fucking hilarious. And then I heard nothing. And then later on, you're like, I was so wrong.
So Halo, the first 20 minutes, you get the power swords. And, you know, it's not... The thing about it is they don't make it out to be some, like, oh, you know, the fucking energy sword is some sacred sword, and we're going to take 3 seasons to build through
no.
it. No, these guys are on the planet.
Stabbing
they're
people.
Fucking stabbing people. They're using all the weapons that you've
they
seen in the game.
They killed an entire room full of children.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is fucking awesome. And then it got into
it was
the
exposition.
Worst exposition on the planet.
For 2 more episodes, too. It's just literally how it works.
And I'm like, I don't care about any of this. So The Bubble does the same thing. It's so my problem isn't necessarily the movie in itself, which is a terrible movie. I'm letting you know right now. Anybody out there that's like, I want to watch The Bubble on Netflix. It's on Netflix. I'm I'll just watch it. That's fine.
I just haven't done it.
My problem with these types of movies is anytime you make a movie about making a movie, it's first off, it's usually 100% terrible, just like it is in this case. And then when you add pandemic into it, it's even more terrible. Anything that has to do with the pandemic, I haven't found to be the greatest content.
I think the problem is we're still living through some of the bullshit from all this. So it's hard to be like you know, that you're in World War II, you know, the Nazis are still invading Europe and they're making movies about the Nazis invading Europe. You're like, nah, it's too soon, man. Like, just fucking let it breathe a bit. Like, I had the same problem.
Everybody's trying to mainstream it. They're trying to make it relevant and say, you know, like, oh, well, this happened.
I had the same problem with when
shut the door on
9/11 happened, and then you got World Trade Center and then Flight United, whatever. And it's like, this literally just fucking happened, man.
World Trade Center was great, though.
I don't care. Nicolas Cage. I just don't. I think you got to let historical shit breathe a bit. Like,
I guess, man.
Let it go, and then we make fun of it a bit.
It's not the fact that it's like, oh, it's about COVID. I just don't think COVID's interesting. So, to me, it's not. It's like, you're sitting there, and they're like, we're in a bubble, and we can't leave for 2 weeks. And you're just like, God, you're fucking stupid. Like,
how hard is your life?
Right.
Stupid actors.
How dare you, insensitive prick.
Can't.
But at the very beginning, Karen Gillian plays in this film where it's called, like, I can't remember the name of it, but she's like, I know you're Palestinian and you're Israel, but we have to join forces to fight,
it's like Independence Day and shit,
to fight aliens. And I guess she plays like half Israeli, half, and it gets like a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes, and that made me laugh. I laughed my ass off at that because that is something that would happen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Then the movie goes, it just fucking downhill as fast as humanly possible. Like, I think it, like, Judd Apatow was like, I should see how fucked up I could make this movie. Like, I don't know if he was actually trying or what. The only redeeming quality in the entire film, and I hate to say this, is your guy, the Mandalorian. He is funny in it. That is it. But he isn't, like, hilarious in it. There's a part, Scott, would like, where he's, like, shitting on the toilet and he makes the guy hold his hand.
I guess he's, like, from what I was reading, he's, like, the slut of the movie. He's always wanted to have sex with people.
So he wants to have sex with this one girl, and okay, she won't, because she's like, you have to marry me and meet my dad. And she's like, we're going to have sex, but you got to do all this stuff first. And he's like, what are you talking about? Then there's a weird scene where he has sex with, like, his personal instructor that's inside of a mirror. Dude, I'm telling you, it's fucking terrible. It's bad.
Yeah. So seeing him in this kind of, I don't know, being comedic, does it give you a little bit of hope for that unbearable weight of massive talent?
Yeah.
Like, seeing just he can do these parts?
I never thought that movie was going to be bad.
I know. A lot of people are shitting on it. We're like, I'm like, dude, it looks like a comedic being John Malkovich to me. Like, I want that kind of fucking meta.
It's one movie
humor.
I can't actually wait for.
Yeah. You have to walk a fine line when doing meta.
Yeah.
But I think Nicolas Cage is perfect for it because no matter how crazy you go,
he's just a character of himself constantly.
You could insert that type of Nick Cage. So that's
like, I'm thinking most of the movies he films lately, he literally walks up on set in his own outfit and just says, let's just film some shit, and then leaves. And that's, you know,
right.
I mean, how much money he'd probably get paid for, what was it, Willy's Wonderland, and didn't say one fucking word.
Yeah.
Like, good for you, man. Get your paychecks. So yeah, I want to see that.
Did you watch anything, Scott?
You haven't said anything. I was a little busy this week.
Okay.
I was a little busy rebuilding our studio.
Rebuilding our
studio. I got to say, though, it looks good.
It does.
When are you going to come to my house?
I'm just concerned that there's not enough room.
He keeps questioning that there's not enough room. It is literally probably triple the amount of room
you're
that
gaining,
he has.
You're gaining more space, man.
We'll see. We'll see. Anyways, so.
You don't know what I've ordered this week.
I haven't ordered anything this week. Oh, actually, it's in my truck.
You're like, oh, no, never mind. I lied.
RoboCop in 4K.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll forgive that. I'd buy that for a dollar.
I was about to go there. I know. Missed my opportunity.
So, anyways, we're here for my movie, which, as you guys all know, it's Oscar. Our Oscar picks this week, this month. And I chose 1977's Taxi Driver,
which came out in 1976.
All the animals come out at night. So From there, real rain will come and wash all the scum off the streets.
You talking to me? Talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
You're only as healthy as you feel. You're only as healthy as you feel.
Taxi Driver.
Doesn't matter. It's still matter. 77. It said 77 on Netflix.
It did not. It said
76. I don't think you're going to be able to insert the shit, so.
76.
Okay,
I'm a producer. I can
it's considered 77. So, whatever.
But it's more considered 76 when it came out.
No, it's 77.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to keep arguing. Let's keep arguing. I mean, it says 76. That's fine.
But, okay. But... Fuck your facts. Fuck your feelings.
I got beef with the internet.
I hate COVID. Fuck you guys.
Don't we all hate COVID?
Look, Joe Rogan, just fucking introduce your movie.
I tried. You talked over me because you're like, I have to be right for no reason.
Came out in 1976, February.
It's
not even like December 31st of 76, so you can consider it. It had a whole year.
You're probably thinking when it was the Oscars was, I think, 77.
It came out, yeah
Oscar
season
was the
Oscar
show, yeah. So it was a 77 movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, get mad. Get mad about it.
Flip the table. There's no room to flip the
There's
table.
The door, buddy.
Can't flip it. You try to flip it, gets caught on the shelf.
George's like, I can't get out. I'm wedged between Turbo Man and a fucking computer desk.
The Mandalorian helmet on my seat.
So, anyways. All right. So, we watched Taxi Driver.
What year was that?
Does it matter? Does it matter?
I'm just wondering.
Because you really want to be right about it. Like I said, are we going to stay on the year all
We should have done the snack show first.
Why?
I can feed you.
I'm completely fine.
Go ahead.
Anyways.
People
anyways.
Love conflict. We're going to agree a lot about this movie. No. I'm letting you know now. No, I just want to connect. I want to get the conflict out now so all we right. can just hug and...
So it was directed by Martin Scorsese and written by Paul Schrader. If you don't know who that is, he did like First Reformed. He's written a lot of movies, hardcore. He's very depressing. Blue collar back in the whatever. I'm not going to say any more dates because God knows. Fucking
in
George.
The 70s.
Yeah.
So the 70s.
It stars Robert De Niro, Jodie Foster, Albert Brooks, Harvey Keitel, Leonard Harris, Peter Boyle, and Sybil Shepherd. And I really want to highlight Michael Chapman, who is a cinematographer on this film, because the cinematography on this movie is fucking awesome. I'm just going to go ahead and blow my load all over this fucking...
Careful, I just cleaned it.
All over this microphone. But I fucking...
It's weird. You say this a lot before we start recording. Why do you... Was this at your catchphrase?
Jordan thinks he's the funny one.
I am.
Anyways...
Yeah, everybody knows I'm the funny one.
God, blow your load.
I fucking love this movie. I thought this movie was insanely good. I watched this movie at 5 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't get to bed. Well, I had a day off, but my schedule was all fucked up, so I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I watched it, and it ended, and I immediately turned it on again because it was that fucking good. A lot of... It's ridiculous how... long I waited to see this movie because I couldn't help but compare this to the stuff that's came after it that's copied it. And to me, okay, I don't know how to explain this because you never saw Taxi Driver either, clearly.
No.
But you didn't like the Joker.
I hated the Joker.
Right. So when this made me not like the Joker as much as I liked the Joker because I thought that this was a better version of that story.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say I connected with Travis Bickle, but I understood his plight.
I'm going to go ahead and vouch for that.
What do you mean? I connected with him?
Yes.
Oh, no. I'm nothing like him.
I'm waiting for you to show up one day with a mohawk.
I did like his mohawk. I don't know, man. The surrealism in this film towards the end, the story, The dialogue, all of it was just, oh, it was like a fucking deliciously good meal. It was satisfying at the end. I fucking loved every second of this movie.
I think for me...
Oh, here we go.
No. I loved it. I love this movie. Good. I think what the only part that felt very unnerving, unraveling for me was the ending. And we'll get into it, but it just, I felt like the movie ended and then they kept going just a little bit. And then tonally it changed and it was weird because I was like, oh. I mean, I'm glad things happened with that character and that was great, but I felt like maybe... It should have ended in the room where he, you know, the gunfight happened.
Well, we definitely talk about that in a second because there's theories.
So yeah, that was a little weird for me, but yeah.
Well, but let's just get into it. Who cares? Okay, we'll start at the end first. So at the end of the movie, he has cut his hair. He met this hooker, Jodie Foster, who he doesn't want to have sex with. He just wants to save her from this life.
He's lost his shit at this point.
Yeah, he's gone completely mad, and this is all taking a toll from him driving this taxi and like all these. You know, just the characters he sees. Well, like at one point, Martin Scorsese gets into his cab and is like, "I'm going to kill."
It's compounded by his insomnia, right, and his lack of sleeping and just all the shit that goes on in the world around him.
He's in New York in the 70s during what I was reading was the garbage strike. So the city is gross and gritty and disgusting. It was 1976. He's a war vet. He's a Vietnam vet. He's got insomnia and he's just, it's taking it, like you said, taking a toll on him. You can almost see it in his face as the movie progresses. His eyes become a little darker. He's got the bags under his eyes. He just hasn't slept. And then he starts going a little crazier. Like he's alone. He's very lonely. He wants to be around people, but he's a loner. Like he just can't.
He doesn't know how to be around
people. He's not very socially adept to dealing with things.
See, I took it as like he didn't want to be around people because anytime he'd go to the, like he almost like he went to the coffee shop just for.
Well, he went to hang out, but it was like he was there, he knew that he wasn't supposed to be there.
Right, like he didn't want to be there. He was only doing it as like, because he thought is what he was supposed to do.
Right, like I think he wants to feel included, but also doesn't know how to navigate that social construct where even when, you know, he's like asking what's-her-face Betsy to a movie, he doesn't know how to process. Maybe taking her to a skin flick is not the best first date you should have with somebody.
That was awesome.
Hilarious, but not exactly the best first date. Well, and doesn't understand why she's pissed.
And that's just something that shows his detachment from like the world around him because he kind of lives in his own world.
Not even
and
that. I think
he's
it
in his own head.
I think it fits in the world around him because he's surrounded by hookers and drug dealers and all the worst of the worst being a cab driver. I think that's the world he knows and that's why he
pushes that direction. A lot of it's said in exposition. Is that the right word? Did he's I get it right? This where he's talking to himself or he's technically writing to his mom, but he's like, I'll go anywhere. I'll go on any site. You know, I'm not like these other cab drivers who refuse to go to like Harlem or Brooklyn.
Why won't you go to Harlem? Use the words.
I'm not allowed
to use those words here in this movie.
But it's kind of funny because I hate constantly bringing him up on the show, but we haven't talked about him in a while. But Tarantino, this almost felt like a Tarantino film. In the first, it was all exposition, all talking, and then 20 minutes of ultra violence, and then the movie ended. You know what I mean? So it was almost like a Pulp Fiction or a True Romance or anything like that.
Well, you see where he takes his influence,
right?
Like when you start to visit some of these older movies, you really start to see, because like you compare movies to Tarantino, where now you can compare Tarantino to these things,
right?
Because now you're revisiting the things that he grew up with, he watched, and influenced how he approached movie making, and you do see it a lot in this movie. And you're right, the cinematography is fantastic in this movie, and it really shows how gritty the city was in the 70s.
There's a lot of stuff in this movie where I recognized from other movies,
right?
And I don't know, and I thought about this long and hard, and I still can't place it.
Yeah, you did,
but. Where they're in the campaign office,
yes,
and he's outside the campaign office, and the guy comes out. I'm like, this was in another movie someplace where they were in a campaign office, and the guy was outside, and they were like, oh, this guy's been out here for a long. And I cannot place my finger on it, but it is in a. It was it does, redone in another movie.
It does feel familiar. I'm not sure what.
And I was Googling it, and I'm like, how do I Google this to find what I'm actually searching for? And I could find nothing on it, but I know that I've seen this in another movie someplace.
Yeah, I think so. The last movie we did, it because Dragon Slayer was one of those movies where I feel like more movies came after that and did it better, and that's what I was comparing to. I had the opposite reaction with this, where I watched this movie and then I almost kind of was pissed off at all the movies that came after.
Yes.
That tonally and almost, like, not, I wouldn't say shot for shot, but kind of mimicked the tone of this movie to a point where it's like, oh, you just ripped off Taxi Driver. So I'm not sitting there analyzing this movie compared to what I've seen now like I did with Dragon Slayer. I'm doing the opposite. And it was kind of neat to feel that way, because I was actually afraid, because it was one of those movies where everyone talks about it. Everyone always does the, oh, you talking to me line. And then it becomes where, well, I feel like I've seen it. I don't need to watch it.
That's same exactly how I felt.
Scarface,
about it.
Same with Godfather. All these movies that people have built up so much into the cultural lexicon. And now I feel like I didn't need to see this. There's so much more to this movie that I didn't know.
Well, that's what I told Aaron.
And it made me so happy to watch
it. I told him
it.
The same thing. And I said, you know, because we were talking about it. And he's like, have you watched it? And I said, no. I said, but I am going to watch it. And I said, it's just, I go, I think I'm going to have high expectations going into this. I said, because it is so talked about in the realm of film that I feel like I can almost talk to it on a level without having seen it.
Right.
But then I saw it, and it was almost nothing like I was anticipating that it was going to be.
Huh. No. And I felt the exact same way. And I was hooked from, like, the first time that he walks into the thing and he starts getting his, you know, his taxi stuff.
Showing his license.
Yeah, and stuff like all that good stuff. And just his delivery. And I'm not going to lie. Over the years, Robert De Niro has turned me off with his politics, regardless of what you believe. I don't care. I just, you know, screaming it from rooftop, I don't appreciate anyone doing that. I think that that's foolish, especially in Hollywood. But as I watched this, I was like, this is what made this, and I'm sure, and Godfather, which I have seen, was what made him the, you know, force he is today.
And got him the role in Meet the Fockers and Meet the Parents. I mean, it's, no, I get it.
After watching this, it bums me out to see the turn he has taken just career-wise. Like, it does kind of bother me, because now it's like, I want to watch older De Niro stuff. I want to see some of the older Jodie Foster stuff. I want to watch more Cybill Shepherd stuff, because she's a looker.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, I just don't think about those things. And now, right, it's like, I want to visit some of the older catalog to see these actors at their highest and their prime. And the, like, one of the only things, other than the ending kind of taking that turn, I think Jodie Foster did a great job. I don't understand why she got a Best Actress nom in this, because I feel like she was barely in this movie.
Maybe supporting, well, she or was, something. Or so, but,
she got,
yeah,
nominated for something.
Yeah, she wasn't
comes
like the
in
main.
At the end of the second act and then kind of stays through the end.
But
I thought,
barely. Like, they have a good diner scene. Yeah. They
the
have
diner
the ending
scene was awesome, and that's what exactly what I was going to bring up.
But for the most part, I feel like this movie was his movie alone, with everyone kind of popping in, because Cybill Shepherd was there for a minute. He gets mad. She disappears. Albert Brooks is in it. And fucking love his hair, big old fro, little Jufro. And then they disappear. So, like, it's like little subplots within this movie, but it's just following him. To see her get the nomination, I mean, I guess, I think I was, because I knew that she was nominated, I think I was expecting more from her character in this.
I thought
it still was good, but I actually really, I think, enjoyed Harvey Keitel's character a little bit more than I think her character,
he
as far
had the
as
giant
story.
Coke nail fucking, and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that when they were hugging, and then I'm looking at his hand. I'm like,
first thing I noticed,
he's got a big Coke nail.
Yeah, he was awesome in it. I did find Jodie Foster to be incredible in this, and especially the diner scene when he's upstairs talking to her, and just her delivery and the way she was acting. You could tell that she wasn't, like, supposed to be there, like, as a hooker.
Yeah,
and she was meant more for this world.
Well, you knew that from the very first scene where she pops into the cab,
right?
You're right.
And she's, you could tell at that moment she had had enough at that moment, and I guess that's what, I mean, really led, you know, Travis's character to pursue her, to pursue her, to try to get her out of, you know, what the situation that she's in, because he sees her pimp come in and basically pull her out of the cab, and that kind of creates his moment of like, oh, okay, I'm gonna save this girl from her. You know, all her wrongdoings.
Yeah, and kind of bouncing off of that, the whole, like, are we, I mean, we're supposed to root for this guy, but I didn't find him necessarily.
Who, Travis?
Yeah. but I don't find him necessarily likable.
So I think they lead it up. They lead it up to where you like, as you were saying, you related to him.
No, there were parts that I related to.
Right, but you kind of, throughout the movie, you're like, oh, okay, I understand what this guy's going through.
Yes.
You have an understanding for him, and then it takes a turn where he almost becomes, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, he goes renegade. And he's a problem at that point. But then it turns back to a heroic stance. You know, and that was the part of the movie that I didn't expect.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was when I finished this movie. I was like,
oh, okay.
Well, like, so the end happens. Okay, so
he got a free pass.
He's problematic. He's got his issues. He's gearing up to assassinate a presidential candidate.
Right.
He tries to go on with it. It doesn't work out. He escapes. So he figures, well, if I can't get this plan to work, I'm going to go rescue Iris, who's Jodie Foster's character. He goes up to Harvey Keitel in the stoop. He's talking. Harvey Keitel is getting pissed off. Get away, get away. Do I know you? Who cares? Get the fuck away from me. Throws his cigarette against his chest. So I'm like, oh, you just pissed off Travis Bickle. And he pulls out like his little like Luger revolver. Pistol or whatever. Shoots him once in the gut in kind of almost a hilarious way.
Falls through that door.
And then like leaves, but doesn't leave. He just walks over to the stoop and just waits and sits and kind of eyeballs it. And then he goes into the whorehouse. Shoots the guy in the hand.
Blows his fingers off.
Because this movie was not really grotesque and over the top as I thought it was going to be. And then it gets to this part where it gets very, like you said, ultra violent. And he shoots the guy and shoots off like three of his forefingers. And then there was like a struggle. And the guy, his only line for 5 minutes straight was, "I'm going to kill you."
Yeah.
And he's yelling it in distress because he's been shot like twice. And then I guess Jodie Foster was with a cop.
Yes.
And he comes out and he shoots Travis in the shoulder. Travis got shot in the neck. And what ensues is like a struggle. The guy who's running the whorehouse gets shot a couple times. The guy who was, you know, fucking around with Jodie Foster, he shoots him in front of her, even though she's pleading for him not to. He tries to kill himself.
He pulls the trigger,
nothing happens. He grabs the other gun, nothing's happened. He's like, oh, shit. Sits on the couch, he's bleeding. You think he's done bleeding to death. Cops come in, and it's a beautiful scene because he does the whole fake gun to his head, you know, head.
With the
and
finger,
it pans up.
Bloody dripping.
And I want to see how this was shot, honestly, because they do the pan over where you're seeing top-down view of the cops, and they've got their guns pointed on them, and you're like, shit, he's dead.
Hence, that's the surreal moment, and that's the part I wanted to talk about. So there is a lot of speculation on the internet, and I guess the commentary. I don't know, but I own that in the Columbia Pictures thing, and now I'm going to actually watch it with the commentary. That he dies in that moment, and then everything that happens after is all like exposition. It doesn't actually exist. It's how he would imagine the rest of like what he did to go.
It kind of makes sense.
So
if you think about it that way,
maybe.
Yeah. So like even the letter from the dad like is fake. All of it.
Like I almost feel like that was his handwriting.
And he sees like himself as this hero. Like what are the chances that she gets into his cab? That Betsy gets into his cab and
or she got the letter with the money to go back to the parents.
Right.
So he's like rescuing her because at the end when they're showing the newspaper clippings, that's not his picture.
Right. And I even said to myself,
like, that's not even remotely close to what his picture looked like.
I said, self, this doesn't make a lot of sense.
Put your pants on.
No. I said, self, this doesn't make a lot of sense. There's no way this is real. And it almost didn't feel real. So I had to do a little bit of research. And it's much debated topic online. Like, it is a hugely debated topic. So I'm not.
Yeah, I'm going to have to dig deep into this.
Yeah,
because
I like that. I like that. But it is meant to be this, like, surreal. Like, like as you see him going up and the cop stuff, it's kind of like, oh, you've added to. You know how he's, like, the whole entire time, he's like, I want to get rid of the trash and just all mm-hmm. that. It's almost as he's adding to it. He's adding to the trash and the destruction of the city.
Right.
He's becoming something he hated in the first place. And then, but in his mind, he doesn't see it that way in his mind. So it's like his entire perspective makes sense in the entire film because what he thinks he's righteous is actually wrong, and it kind of depends on how you view things. I don't know, man. Like I said, we could spend 3 fucking shows on this because it's so
well. This actually changes my opinion of the end, because I finished this movie this morning before we came over here to record the show, so I didn't have a lot of time to really process it, because I came over here and then we were kind of working on stuff trying to get everything ready for the show. And I kind of like that, because usually I get time to kind of dive into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. I do some searching. I kind of look up some plot stuff on it and kind of see what other people say and kind of put it all together in my head. And this is kind of the first time I'm hearing that, because I kind of, when I watched the movie, I watched it with that ending and I thought to myself, okay, something happened where he became this hero and everything just went away. And
yeah,
life
there's
moved
no
on.
Repercussions to
yeah.
his action.
Yeah, exactly. But
other
now
than,
that you're saying
Betsy
that,
was like, oh, hey.
Yeah, now that you're saying that, like, it's probably it. Not even real, that makes more sense now when I think about it, is that the movie ended with him on the couch.
It's possible, yes. But what... I don't know. I feel like Scorsese is probably better than the false ending.
It's not...
You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like...
It's not a false
but I
ending.
I think it goes well with this movie.
It's like yeah. a, in and, that I, respect. And Scorsese's done that stuff before. He's no, done the movies that you don't like Shutter Island and stuff like that. I don't think that Scorsese is trying to trick you. I think he was showing you that the whole time, and it's almost I hate comparing this now to, because this is such a fucking good movie compared to the Joker. The Joker is now trash compared to this film, but it's almost like when the Joker thinks he has a girlfriend, and you are stuck in that plot for a very long time in that film. And you are really made to believe that, okay, this guy got this girl because, you know, he's getting famous and stuff. It kind of goes back to the, well, what in this movie is really going on, right, and what in this movie isn't going on? You know, Travis might have always been crazy, and all the good stuff that was happening, you know, like, I guess there's even debate, like, he went into the
bodega.
No,
the nudie movie.
Nudie movie with Betsy. And I guess, like, and like, if that was even real, because he, once he went into the political thing and just started yelling, would he?
Well, the same thing when he was at the bodega and shot the robber.
Yeah.
And then
nothing happened.
And then he's watching whatever it is, Soul Train or whatever, and they got the guy's shoes.
It was American Bandstand.
American Bandstand, is that what it was? Yep. And he got the guy's shoes on the floor. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, how coincidental is that, that he apparently killed the guy who was on American Bandstand, and now they're mourning him on TV.
Right.
So now it makes sense to think that maybe this was all just in his head, and
he's going crazy. Yeah, you don't know what's real anymore.
He's his own hero, you know, and it does make a lot of sense now that, you know, we're talking about this, because... You know, I mean, again, it's not much time to process this movie for me. But
yeah, and I watched it late last night, and then I, you know, kind of just laid down and went to bed right after. So I'm the same way. I didn't really look up a ton of stuff. I didn't do that deep dive that I've done on other movies, and I think that's probably helping me here, because now we're just talking about it out loud. Because honestly, I never would have thought I wouldn't say false ending, but it's, you know, his dream life ending, you know what I mean?
Right.
I just felt like it was so odd, because I felt a good ending for this movie was to see the guy that at some point you start to root for, but you also don't know why you're rooting for him, to do something that he thinks is right, and then he gets killed, because you know there's repercussions to your actions. He killed the guy in the bodega. He was going to kill a presidential hopeful. He killed, you know, a pimp, a cop, and somebody else. He wasn't walking away from this.
Correct. Exactly.
And even like, as I'm talking about it now, I realize, yeah, there's no chance they would keep this guy as a hero if he had literally just gunned down a cop, regardless of what the cop was doing. Not in the 70s, not with the police the way they were.
Exactly.
That man would have been probably killed.
But shot for shot, the way they show it with the cops coming in, and they kind of leave it to your imagination.
Yeah.
As okay, nothing happened afterwards, so I think you fall into that. Oh, okay.
I thought it was done.
Yeah, he got off. He got off, and he skated this crazy moment of his where he was about to snap and lose his shit, and now he's back in the pipeline again. He's driving his taxi.
Right.
He's growing his hair out. And that's something that, you know, I questioned at the end of the movie. I was like, oh, wow, how long was this after the incident, because it kind of pans that he was in the hospital for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, so I'm like, okay, it was enough time for him to grow his hair out completely again, you know, so he's back in the fold and he's back to driving his cab and living a normal life. But, you know, I mean, it all kind of makes sense now when, you know, you're talking about possibly all this stuff being made up.
Yeah. It's weird. I'll rewatch this movie. Like, this will be absolutely. This will be a yearly watching. I'll probably buy like some updated 4K beautiful extra commentary.
Yeah, exactly. And there is no movie I'd rather see more in the theaters now than this.
I do want to
see
this. So,
if Majestic or what, we're all going. We're going, and we're going to fucking eat pie with cheese on top afterwards, and we're going to kill Pips.
Well, we might eat pie tonight.
What do you mean?
Oh, we're going to eat pie.
Some apple pie.
Oh, we're going to eat some pie.
We're going to see American Pie. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm going to bring my four movie collection, and hopefully he'll sign it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I according to the girl that works, this is so like, we're just totally derailing the show. But according to the girl, you have to pay for it, which is fine. I'll pay a couple bucks to get something signed and a picture with Rookie of the Year, bro.
I guarantee that's $50 minimum.
Funky butt loving, bro.
Make him sign it.
But yeah, so what'd you give it?
It's so hard for me because I don't like giving fives because I always feel 3.5. I feel like this is a 4.5 for me.
Okay,
like there's still things that I feel conflicted about, and maybe a rewatching would bump that up. I think this is a damn good movie.
Oh yeah,
and
I feel retarded.
I didn't want to text you last night. I feel the same way. I feel so stupid for avoiding it so long. and it's just like, it's one of those ones where like, okay, so there's this and Scarface.
I've never seen Scarface, but
has been so
it. It's good.
So taken by certain communities,
it's
that
been shoved
and
down
they've
your
ruined
throat.
It yeah. for me.
First off, Scarface is too long, and it's not as good as everyone says. But it
is
that's a good
why,
movie.
That's why I've not
good,
watched it.
It is a good movie.
Yeah, and I'll watch it eventually. But I'm not going to hold it the same regard as Taxi Driver.
Right.
And this bums me out, like you said, that we've waited so long.
I feel so dumb.
4.5. So dumb. It's pretty damn good. And I hate saying that. I love this movie because everyone loves this movie.
Right,
it's been out
right.
so long. It's highly lauded. It's got
2 40-year-old guys watching Taxi right. Driver. Wow, guys, you guys are breaking the mold. You're all white. You
right.
like the movie.
45-year-old movie. 46-year-old movie. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah. So 4.5 for me. I like this way more. And it's about time you pick something good. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I enjoyed it.
What about you, Scott?
I'm in the same boat. I gave it a 4.5. I don't know if it's the perfect movie. It's a really good movie. The only issues I had with it, and this is just my own personal issues, is that it is such a dated piece because it is very 70s.
I'm okay with that.
The dialogue was super cheesy, and it threw me off a lot because it is very like, you know, hey... You know,
so hip cat.
Yeah, hip cat. You know, and it was just weird to watch. And again, that's like I said, that's my own.
That's a period piece, though.
But it was done in the 70s, and it was done to reflect that time. And I get it, but we've moved on from a lot of that stuff. And now, even now, like movies that go back and do the 70s don't do it that cheesy. So it was almost like a play on the 70s, which the dialogue threw me a little bit. That was the only complaint I have about it. Like I said, that was my own personal complaint, but it was a 4.5.
All right, cool. So I told Scott this the other day when I was gushing about it because I couldn't keep it in my pants. And I didn't want to type it out because the only thing is I needed to talk to Scott and I needed to tell someone because I literally watched this movie twice in a row. Literally. Like, not I waited a couple days and watched it again. I watched it and then my kid wasn't up, so I put it on again. Movies you can talk about and you can say, well, maybe here was this and blah, blah, blah was that. I love that. This is a movie where you watch it and you can go out afterwards and drink. There was a comment I made to Scott that is 100% true. If I would not have seen Fight Club at the age I saw Fight Club, and the reason it's my favorite movie is because it's what made me fall in love with movies. It's what made me actually want to start digging into like cinematography and direction and script writing and all that good stuff. This is the movie that would have done it, and it's a 5 for me because of those reasons. Not I respect your guys' scores. I'm not actually mad. It's whatever. But this movie is the quintessential cinephile film. It's it's like you put it in the center and then you watch all the branches grow out and you can connect it to a bunch of other stuff. And that to me is fucking awesome. I could talk about it with anyone, anytime. I want it. Like I said, I want to see it in the theater. I want it. This will be a yearly watch, if not more. I'll probably be screaming it from the rooftops if people haven't seen it. I can't wait to show Parker one day. Like, this is...
this weekend.
This is the movie, man. This is the...
you're two now,
sit
boy.
Down.
The one.
Yep, you're watch two. Taxi it's Driver. Time to watch Taxi Driver.
I highly enjoyed it. So, I was so happy I picked it.
So, I know how they categorize this movie. What would you call this movie if you had to put it in a box? Because I have... after watching it and... a bunch of stuff. I have an idea of why.
Is Lonely Lonely Man movie a type of movie?
No,
I would say
Hungry Man Dinner either.
I would say I don't know, dark drama.
Yeah, they're calling it like a suspenseful drama or thriller drama. The score and the way this movie is, I would almost think this is like almost a noir movie.
Yeah,
it's very almost jazzy music. It's a little more saxophony upbeat for the movie that's playing. I'm sitting there.
It's definitely dark.
Last night for our show TikTok account, I'll watch it later, podcast.
which TikTok. Is only pictures of things that Jordan likes.
Yeah, it's my TikTok.
Well, head over there because you're going to get plenty of content. You're going to get Aaron fuming over this movie room. We're going to film every second
you'll
of it.
Get no, the, you'll get the snack show.
You're going to get Jordan's TV twice.
I haven't left the house. It's a week old.
I was going to say, to be honest, to be fair, it just started.
Yeah. So I'm looking up the soundtrack. I'm listening to the score. It almost feels like a noir movie. He's moving through this dark and gritty New York, and I'm sitting there going, man, if I were to time travel, this is the last place I want to visit. I don't want to visit 1970s trashy New York. This is gross. Like, this is a gross, visceral movie, and I think
it is a noir.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver is the prime example of a neo-noir masterpiece.
Yeah.
Telling the story of a PTSD-riddled Marine, which
great
makes sense.
I'm glad at least I'm on the same page, because I'm looking at some of the other descriptions of it. They're like, it's a thriller. It's a suspenseful. I'm like, I didn't find it to be a thriller so much as it's a noir, and it shows this degradation of this man's psyche as he is dealing with, post, Vietnam life in New York at the grossest time where, crime was up. The city is literally dirty because there was a garbage strike. There are factors that are in play where he's, losing his mind from not being able to sleep. He's frustrated with the world. He doesn't know how to interact with people, and he wants to feel like he's a hero at some point. And maybe that's part of the post-war life that he wants, is that he wants to feel like he did something. Cause historically people from Vietnam were, they're shit on. And
right.
So now he wants to feel like he did something good. It was such a good movie. Like,
Google has it listed as a drama.
See, that's what I'm saying.
No,
like,
but if you
Netflix
ask it,
was a different way too.
If you ask Google if Taxi Driver is a noir, it says yes. Hmm. It also, if you ask Google,
apparently Google is confused.
If Batman 89 is a noir, it also says yes.
I would say it's a comic. Yeah, comically dark.
Yeah. So, well, guys, I am really excited we were all on the same page in that film. It was nice to finally pick a very good movie, so we'll have to keep that rolling. So next week we get Jordan's movie, and what movie will that be, Jordan?
I am going to go with something that I wanted to pick before. I'm going with the 1957 Bridge on the River Kwai.
The adventure they'll all be talking about as long as the motion picture screen has the power to thrill, to excite, to amaze. The winner of 7 Academy Awards and 27 International Awards. From the makers of Lawrence of Arabia, The Bridge on the River Kwai.
I am the commanding officer of this camp. You British prisoners have been chosen to build a bridge across the River Kwai. If you work hard, you will be treated well. But if you do not work hard, you will be punished.
Ah!
the picture that must be seen and seen again, for the suspense of its drama, for the courage of its fighting men, for the humor of its story.
I thought you were the enemy, sir.
Well, I'm an American, if that's what you mean.
Men on a desperate mission, seeking a moment of peace, never free from fear and danger. Now you can see it. From the producer and director of Lawrence of Arabia, the magnificent adventure of our age, best picture and winner of six other Academy Awards, including best actor, Alec Guinness, best director, David Lean.
Why are you huffing?
Because I thought you were
immediately huffed.
I thought you were picking Casablanca.
Nope.
And this, and what awards was this up for, Jordan?
Best picture.
That's it?
I don't know. I didn't look it up.
That was the whole point.
Yeah, best picture. You want more?
Yes.
Here, I'll give you more.
One is enough, right?
Jesus Christ.
That's all it has to have is one.
You gotta have more.
I have a feeling this one's gonna be incredibly boring. But I'm gonna watch it. I'm just saying. No.
He's already deducting points off of this.
He's like, I'm starting it at a 3.5.
British POWs, directed by David Lean.
It's honestly like, it's one of the quintessential like war movies that
I know.
I gotta say, like, all men, you know, in quotes, have loved and watched and referenced, and all these other war movies that come after it are.
So it won 1958 best picture, best actor Alec Guinness, best adapted screenplay, best original score, and best director. It also won best film editing, best cinematography, and it was nominated for best supporting actor, S. Hakawa.
Yeah, so it's a shit movie, apparently, and he's going to regret watching this. So, Bridge on the River Kwai, assholes.
I just said it felt it was going to be boring. That doesn't mean it's going to be boring.
It is long, and it's why I avoided it originally when I picked, what was it, Where Eagles Dare? And then Where Eagles Dare was just as long, so I'm like, oh, fuck it, we'll just watch this one.
Two hours and 41 minutes.
Oh, God, I hate you so much. That's fine.
You have like 4 weeks to watch it based off the when we're recording versus when
we'll
be
at Disneyland all weekend, next weekend. So I really only have the same amount of days, but it's okay. I'll catch it on like a Thursday or something. Cool beans, guys. Well, we will see you next week with Bridge of the River Kwai.
On the River Kwai.
Yeah, that movie.
1976, 1957.
Troubled water.
1938's Bridge 57. Of the River Kwai. Kwai. real quick.
With Alan Guinness.
Real fast before we go. Did you guys see that Will Smith got
banned for 10 years.
That's crazy.
Now, it doesn't take him out of contention forever winning an Oscar. He can still be nominated and he can still win. He just can't accept it live. He can't pre-record anything and be on.
That's awesome.
But he can't be a part of the broadcast.
This is probably the answer to the question of was this staged then?
Oh,
because,
God.
Which the answer is no.
Right. The answer is now a resounding no. That this was not staged, because if they're gonna go as far as to ban somebody for 10 years from going, then man,
I'm gonna
applaud you, because you are seeing this through to the end.
Right. If they really wanted to, they could have took it as Oscar, which
they wouldn't.
Hilarious.
They wouldn't, only because Polanski still has his Oscars.
Yes.
You know, Weinstein still has his stuff. So
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
guys.
But you know, those are kid diddlers and rapists.
to take his
over
there. I was
theirs,
saying that they shouldn't.
I was trying to gloss over the fact that you're a kid diddler.
I just had a moment where I was like, I guess I'm not going to say anything.
Don't edit that one out. All I'm saying is that, yeah, they were going to rule on all this like next week. And because he resigned last Friday or April 1st for those listening later, whatever. Because
he's a fool.
Because he resigned his position in the Academy, they felt they needed to make a decision quickly. And they apologized to everyone that was watching. They said they should have made a better decision at the time. Like, they were
trying to
save face.
It's kind of hard.
They told them.
Fuck Papa Murphy's.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Squirrel.
I realize moving the TV was a bad choice.
No, I'm just
now he can see it.
God damn it!
Now he's got to do two things and at once. He's got to watch the TV and
no, what we do
talk.
Is we put a script up here so he at least has notes. So no, he can just look up at the TV.
So I just wanted to say with the Taxi Driver and the Will Smith stuff, it seems like a lot of mental stuff going on nowadays. So if you
could you imagine De Niro winning Best Actor for this movie, but he's not allowed to go accept it?
Right.
That's the thing. Like Will Smith is doing well. Some projects, some are getting canceled. Fuck him. But
Bad
others
Boys
are.
4.
God. But yeah, he can't be a part of anything.
Accepts his award.
Well, I mean, for a decade. Like this will put him in like almost his 60s before he can come back.
I'm gonna say something controversial.
Is he black?
No. Get out of your toxic relationships.
Fucking A.
All know the reasoning
Did
behind that
Did you see the
slap.
Video that surfaced lately about him being filmed and shit?
You know, we're just three white guys, and we can't really have an opinion on this, but I'm just saying that
no,
girl...
that shit.
That girl
I can
is,
have an opinion. She's a nut job.
I like Will Smith a lot
She's
before this.
90% of his problems.
I thought that...
99%.
But,
and all of them are his bitch.
Yeah. And his bitch is definitely one. I just... I don't want to be that guy because I don't know the relationship. We only be seeing the bad stuff. But with everything that has happened in the last few years since they have gone social media, it seems like one of the absolute worst
Bonkers.
Relationships of all time. Like me and my wife, we fight a lot, but it's
not. We better cut this off.
It's not even. I love her more than anything. There's nothing I wouldn't do for her. I would never get up in the middle of anything and slap someone because someone made a joke. Because I know
he would try, but Scott would lay him out in the parking lot.
You know, if you're in near the horrible relationship, please get out.
It's rough. And there's probably so much behind the scenes. I mean, we can't really speculate, but you get to start seeing a lot of the things that are starting to leak, and you're like, I don't condone his actions. I think punishment is just his punishment.
It's a boiling point, man.
But
she has emasculated him to the point where
it's bad.
That's what we get now.
He had to do something to feel like he was in control.
Yes. He was the fucking Fresh Prince. He did Independence Day. And now he's crying about a girl who cheated on him. Did you see that? I guess there was some Facebook show they had.
Red Table Talks or
something
whatever.
Like that. And it popped up where he's like, oh, she's turning 37, so I did all this stuff for her 40th birthday. Mm-hmm. And she hated it and said it was just about my ego. Oh, my God.
She's very problematic.
I can't stand her. I will never see another movie she's in.
Have fun in G.I. Jane 2.
Can you name another movie
Come
she's
fucking slap me, Will.
Honestly,
Set It Off and the Matrix films.
Fuck the Matrix films.
You're right. So, yeah, G.I. Jane 2.
Part of that.
Go see G.I. Jane 2. Alopecia's not that bad. Come at me, bros. All right.
Fuck your eyebrows.
I actually knew a couple people in the Army who got it, and
it
fixes itself.
To blow it up, well, I mean, even if it doesn't, to blow it up as if, and you know, I'm not condoning making fun of people for things that you can't control. I understand there is a line, but
make fun of
it was a stupid G.I. Jane joke,
and
I'm not going to keep harping on the Oscars. Fuck, it's 2 weeks, but
I know
it's just it makes it like the way they kept framing it everywhere was she's suffering from cancer, we have to not make these
right.
Fuck you shaved your head,
right?
Your eyebrows were fine, I'm sure everything else was cool, you shaved your head to avoid some of the patchy bits, I get it, that sucks for you, but you made it such a big deal everywhere else. I guarantee you didn't make him go up to punch anybody when they made marriage jokes, because that's funny, because
right.
Guess what? But the second you didn't like a joke about G.I. Jane, a movie that no one cares about and no one would have talked about after that joke was made, to have that happen, it sucks for him. Fuck you. You're banned for 10 years, and you know what? She shouldn't be involved with anything. People need to stop fucking...
If she shows up to present, and I would fucking... I'd be so mad.
Fuck. It's going to be Chris Rock presenting next year. I'm going to be so happy.
Right. I can't wait to hear his stand-up about it.
I know.
Because you know he was ready to fuck it.
He wanted to, but he's like, look, I wrote this shit out already. Like, this is my act. We'll talk about it later.
No, but I meant at the thing, because I think
he was going to say.
He stopped. He stopped himself. He was like, well, I could. And then he stopped, and he's like,
"And I have
TV. Let's do it. I got to go."
I have never seen G.I. Jane. I own it now. I bought it after this.
After.
And I can't wait to watch it. So
I'm going to start superimposing her in the movie.
All right, guys. So as always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jordan.
And Scott.
Big goals, huh? Well, see you later.